Welcome to The Virtual Shift, a show looking at the seismic changes happening in healthcare with virtual care at the epicenter. Join me and my guests as we look at key cultural and policy shifts impacting how providers, payers, and patients connect, as well as how care is being reimagined both for today and the future. Hello, and thanks for tuning in today. I'm your host, Tom Foley. You can learn more about this show by visiting the program on healthcarenowradio.com, and be sure to follow me on LinkedIn, Twitter, at Foley Tom, and the hashtag, The Virtual Shift. Today, we have a great guest online. We have Alan Corey, MD, PhD Consulting. Alan, welcome to the program.
Thank you, Tom. Happy to be here.
Alan, the reason why I wanted to bring you onto the program was you come at it, the market, as a consultant. So you're engaging a lot of different entities looking to move in the direction of adopting a virtual care platform. So I'm really interested in understanding what are they looking for and what direction are you going. So with that in mind, tell us a little bit about your organization and the type of and the consulting that you do.
Okay. Thanks, Tom. Yeah, right now I'm a private consultant, you know, and I have a whole bunch of clients, and some of them are small telehealth companies and so forth. Prior to what I'm doing now, I was the lead for telemedicine at Willis Towers Watson, which, as you know, is a big employer consulting firm. We did everything to help the employers function better. And in fact, I led the telemedicine practice there. I started doing that in 2012, so I've seen the field evolve. You know, at first, basically, employers said, okay, this sounds like a good thing, may appeal to some of our employees. It's not very expensive. Let me bring it on. And they all sort of chose a partner and started offering telemedicine to their employees. And then they saw it really wasn't used very much at all. And in fact, it was quite expensive for them because they were paying on a PEPM basis. So now where I think a couple of iterations later, I think the world really understands what works in telemedicine. There's a whole bunch of literature supporting its use, like looking at things like cost and efficacy and all those sorts of things. So I think what the field is actually at a good place right now.
So before we go on, you use the term telemedicine, and you know we always hear telehealth, telemedicine, virtual care, right? Tell us a little bit about your definition of telemedicine, just so the audience can align with your thoughts.
So the way I look at telemedicine is it's the traditional. The synchronous visit with a provider. It could actually be telephone or it can have a video component to it. Video's better. You know, I'm an internist, by the way, so I lived in the world of face-to-face encounters. So I think video is better, but I'm not saying that straight telephone visits are without merit. They're quite useful, depending on the situation. So telemedicine is that. Virtual care I see as a bigger entity. Virtual care encompasses everything from asynchronous visits, information, chat function, but also now, almost more importantly, the ability to tie in devices and to understand more about what the patient is experiencing with remote monitoring. Eventually, Tom, I think it gets to be very, very big. I mean, I'm sort of seeing a world where the traditional medical data, the ICD and CPT codes are in a database somewhere. And they're combined with the remote patient monitoring data and maybe genetic data. And there are AI engines churning all this and digging up relationships that the individual clinician, like me when I was an internist practicing, might not notice. And also adding a lot of outside knowledge to that data mix. So in the future, I see this as an entity that is somewhat different than traditional medicine and actually more powerful in some aspects.
So do you see it as an extension of or the current brick and mortar type of care, or do you see it as a reimagined delivery of care model as people often espouse?
I think there's always a primary care doctor in the midst of this because patients like to have someone who can interpret the data for them. They like to have someone who remembers what their history is so they can customize the data for them. But that doctor doesn't need to sit in a building anymore. I think that doctor can be at home, can be anywhere, really. So I think that the role of a doctor, and there's a whole definition now of what a primary care doctor is, let's say a regular doctor, someone you can call and trust, you interpret the data. I think that's there. I think it has value.
You know, you bring up an interesting point. You know, we always talk about the classic delivery of care model and brick and mortar, and we talk about what's new. It's about the patient being in the home or being at the employer's location. Wherever they are, that's the setting of care, right? Mm-hmm. But you bring up a different point in that, hey, the doctor doesn't necessarily need to be in that brick and mortar either, yeah. right? So yeah. he or she could be in both any place. And as long as there is, you used the key word there, as long as there is an establishment of trust in that dialogue and the understanding of one another, because it's important for the patient to understand a doctor too, as you know, it just, again, redefines the delivery of care. Mm-hmm. Would you agree?
I agree completely, actually.
So as a consultant, obviously you're engaging a number of different clients. What are they looking for?
Right. So from the buyer of the service, if it's an employer, they're looking for convenience for their employees, and they're hoping for some cost savings. Now, at first, I would say they were skeptical about cost savings, but they were interested in convenience. And the more successful the employer was, like the iBanks and the tech companies and so forth, they didn't really care very much about the cost, but they really cared about the convenience for their employees. Now, I think, you know, for your average company, they're really interested in convenience. They hope it costs no more than traditional care, and they're hoping that it will save some money. That's from the employer's point of view. You know, the health systems, when they think about virtual care, I think right now they just see it as a reality that they are in an ideal position to be managing hybrid care. In fact, they see themselves as having an advantage because they can bring the patient in when they need to, but they recognize that patients really like the convenience of virtual care. Now, I'm based in Cleveland. I get my care at the Cleveland Clinic, and I would say half my visits now are virtual, and my friends who are still practicing at the clinic basically say they're sort of vectoring on in about 10% of all visits in primary care, at least, being virtual. And then, you know, the insurance companies, you know, at first, they needed to be able to offer this sort of service because their employer clients were asking it of them. They are hoping that it saves them money. And my question always when a client, typically an employer, was considering using a service from an insurance company was if that insurance company is including things like telemedicine in their fully insured care as opposed to the TPA care. If they're including in their fully insured care, then likely it is saving money and it's efficient. I would say more and more, you know, the insurance companies, which have the capability of navigation, or really have learned how to use this very, very well, know where it works, knows where it doesn't work. So to answer your question, I think the answer from a consultant's point of view depends on the client. And that, you know, there's also a small movement for direct-to-consumer sales, you know, but of course, as a consultant, you know, I'm not involving each consumer out there, but sometimes I work with the companies that offer direct-to-consumer sales.
Yeah, we might dive into that a bit mm-hmm. as we get into this discussion. Talking about the employer and their needs, you know, efficiency is one thing, but, you know, with COVID, the dynamics of the employer-employee location changed dramatically, mm-hmm. right? You know, people got very used to the idea of the home is also the setting of where I work, let alone where I get care. And so the point there being is, and now that employers are starting to ask their employees to come back, you've seen the news articles where there's a lot of resistance to go back for many reasons. Well, how do you think that plays out in further accelerating the idea of a virtual care delivery model?
Yeah, I think, you know, the whole notion of the home as the venue for care is a powerful one. And how did all this start? It actually started about 5 years ago when insurance companies noted that very sick patients, say those with congestive heart failure, were readmitted to the hospital a lot. And they were, of course, motivated to do the right thing by the patient, but also to save money themselves by trying to prevent that. And they were sort of the first out of the gate to pay for expensive equipment that would sit in a patient's home so the patient could report crucial information to them. And it worked, Tom. I mean, you know, people with very, very bad congestive heart failure were admitted to the hospital less. And that was a successful model, and a lot of insurance companies offer that now. So that was great. That's, you know, one aspect of care, but that pertains only to a small number of people. We've seen lots of interesting experiments in how one can combine virtual care with at-home care, and Amazon Health is probably the best example of that, but they're not the only ones, you know, trying to offer both kinds of care. And typically in these sorts of models, care is when you need at-home care, it's usually an RN who goes to the house, and the RN can contact a physician who can instruct the RN as to what to do. By the way, it's a very powerful model. In other words, you know, if I'm trying to do a virtual visit, there are some visits in which I really need to lay hands on. Does someone have swollen lymph nodes, for example? And I can instruct the nurse to do that part of the exam for me. So that's a useful model. There are other companies out there that are actually trying to move the urgent care setting to the home. In other words, if someone has a laceration and needs sutures, there are companies now that are actually doing very well because insurance companies will reimburse them well, who can actually dispatch usually a nurse practitioner or a physician assistant to the home, and they can do stuff at home that normally couldn't be done at home prior to that. You have to go to the emergency room or the urgent care. So we're seeing this whole spectrum of activity. Now, to I think complete, well, let me go back. When I was at Willis Towers Watson, we did a lot of internal analyses that we never attempted to publish, but we wanted to get some better ideas for ourselves as to what was feasible in various kinds of care and what wasn't feasible. And we actually did an internal analysis, basically based on the opinions of the physicians we had there, to understand what percentage of visits could be telemedicine visits down the line. And this is now circa 6 or 7 years ago, so the opinions of these things have changed. I have the numbers here. And by the way, we assume that patients had a remote monitoring device at work so you could know what the blood pressure for the patient was. And our analysis indicated that something like 41% of primary care visits, 37% of ED visits, 64% of urgent care visits could be done at home if you had those sorts of devices available. The numbers, I think, would be higher now because people have a better understanding of what's possible with virtual care. So the gap here now, I think, is to have great devices that will report data to physicians. That means you can do more everyday care in the home. You can do virtual care now, but there are some limits to it. Like my example, you know, do you have to feel the lymph nodes or not? But there are, with remote patient monitoring devices, I think the world opens up a lot. And I think a lot of care can be delivered in the home.
I would agree. I look at remote patient monitoring, remote therapeutic monitoring, and chronic care management, coupled with telehealth, telemedicine, as the ability to provide this continuous care model. So wherever that provider might be, whether it be brick and mortar, let's just say it's the brick and mortar. I often use this analogy that, based on CMS data, again, my audience hears it 1,000 times, so, but almost every show. And that is that the average Medicare patient with 5 chronic conditions sees 9 different doctors. Based on CMS data, they're only in front of their doctor 15 hours in a given year. The question is, what happens the other 8,745 hours? That's really where wellness takes place. And to be able to extend care out of the brick and mortar into the home and provide that continuous care model. So if I do have a blood pressure cuff and I'm on plan to take my vitals 16 days out of a 30-day period, I can better track, even though my blood pressure might be within the defined range of that individual, even though they might have hypertension, I could see the curve starting to itch up, right? So even though they're in range, there's information to be had just the fact that the curve is going in the wrong direction. Same thing with glucose and A1C and things of that nature. So the point there being is, and then with therapeutic monitoring, did I take my meds, right? What's my pain level? You know, some of the other non-vitals, if you will, obviously it's non-physiological data. And then chronic care management is I can manage these folks. 6 out of 10 adults have at least one chronic condition, right? I can better manage these conditions in their home as an extension of the brick and mortar. So I do look at it as one. But the point there being is I could hypothetically, actually in reality, move the needle of that patient, that consumer, to a better state of wellness with these added programs, because I can increase the revenue, increase the profitability of the provider, mm-hmm. provide better care, and I don't have to take on any risk. Mm-hmm. So I can get the value without taking on a risk-oriented contract, because I have these other programs that I can leverage to better engage that patient. What are your thoughts on that?
So, you know, right now, remote therapeutic monitoring is reimbursable if you're doing physical therapy and respiratory care. But as an internist, I keep thinking of those patients I had with, say, atrial fibrillation. You know, I would put them on a medicine to control their heart rate, and there was no way of knowing how they were doing until they came back. I mean, I could put them on a Holter monitor, and I did, you know, and they got 24 hours worth of recording. That was sort of the state of the art at that time. But wouldn't it be better if they had a continuous monitor and I could see a dashboard of their heart rate over the past month? I would really know if my therapy is working. So now we're talking, Tom, about doing better care than we were ever able to do.
Yeah, and that's it's important. Absolutely. And that's the whole point, right? The old model, and it's not a bad model. Mm-hmm. The old model didn't allow for this, to your point, a continuous engagement model. So I'll even go one step further and say, hey, put all these different handheld medical devices, put them in the garbage. Mm-hmm. Let me wear a patch. Mm-hmm. And this patch is going to tell me a lot relative to my physiological being. So frictionless, I don't have to do anything. I just have to make sure the patch stays on for its 30-day life cycle, and I could have a continuous measure of my pulse ox, my heart rate, a number of different things. Thoughts?
It would provide better care. The one thing that needs to be done is there needs to be a report that's digestible to the physician. You can't give he or she raw data. It would just be too much to absorb. But a dashboard or an AI engine that would basically say, hey, this person had these concerning signs and you should respond to them is something that would be very, very important in this area.
Do you think providers are aware of what is available in the context of remote patient monitoring, therapeutic monitoring, and chronic care management? Because the reason why I ask that question is, you know, we talk about the doctor needing to see this data, right? I absolutely mm-hmm. agree, but the doctors say, hey, I don't have time to see all that data, right? Yeah. But the point is that if you can engage in these programs, someone can do the monitoring for you, if you will. You can either hire staff or subcontract a staff, but you get escalated the patients that are in the greatest need. So the provider is always working at the top of his license, his or her license, and the rest of the patients are engaged, which is a good thing, but they don't necessarily need a day-to-day attention of the providers. What are your thoughts?
You're talking about changing the reimbursement system. So, you know, again, I'm an internist, you know, and I practiced in the day when you had a panel of 2,000 people. And by the way, they were all like the patient you described. They all had five chronic. Here's an anecdote. You start practicing when you're, whatever, 30, and your patients are all 50, and then they age along with you. So you look up one day and they're 85 and you're 65 and they have five chronic conditions. But the ideal way to practice would be if you had responsibility for the population and you were at least some part of your reimbursement reflected your care for the population, then you'd be very, very excited about all of these devices that are out there. You'd be motivated to learn about them. If, on the other hand, it's just another thing you need to do, with the manufacturer saying it'll only take you a couple of minutes every day, you'll groan because there's many requests to spend a couple of minutes every day. So you ask how many doctors would appreciate it. In the days of electronic medical records, I would say 30% of docs loved them, 30% were sort of neutral, and 30 to 40% hated them because it slowed them down. You're going to see the same distribution. Some significant percentage of doctors will like the stuff if they can use it in a way that's not onerous at the very least, and hopefully beneficial.
Interesting. So where do you see the market going? Again, you're talking to the folks that have their fingers on the pulse, mm-hmm. not only doctors, but, you know, employers and health plans and things of that nature. if you were the crystal ball reader, where would you say we would be 3 years, 5 years from now?
I think virtual primary care is going to grow, you know, especially with companies that allow you to do chatting with your doctor if you have a quick question, and then formal visits. I think that will live on because it will have value. People will like it. And especially, you know, people who don't have jobs, Tom, with flexible hours, or at least hours, a position that lets them sneak off to a doctor visit and come back. The care will be much, much improved, I think. So that's the first thing. The second thing is that I think that the companies that provide virtual care, well, there needs to be a navigation function. The insurance companies recognize that. You know, the announcement that, you know, came out of CVS yesterday about their combined care at home, go to MinuteClinic, and all that sort of stuff. You know, I think to me the most interesting part about that was that there was going to be a navigation function for you. Here's my difficult patient, 38-year-old male who's had fleeting chest pain and has ignored it for 2 months. It's now 4 p.m. on Sunday, and the pain comes back. And now all of a sudden he's scared, doesn't know what to do. And the employer basically said something about virtual care, whatever the heck that is, the retail clinic down the store. He takes himself to the emergency room, and the party starts, you know, and he gets tests and all. And they diagnose musculoskeletal pain 12 hours later, but at great cost. I think some sort of navigation function is going to be important to help that person access the right venue of care. And then I think remote patient monitoring is going to be there. You put all those things together, you have care that's more pleasing to the patient because it's more convenient. Hopefully it's less expensive. And hopefully it's less expensive to the insurance company. And hopefully it provides better care.
Very interesting. So do you think, I would agree absolutely, mm-hmm. that you need someone who knows the system to help you navigate it and advocate for you, because there is way too much surprise. I can't tell you the different scenarios in Southwest Florida that I have with my mother-in-law and some of the things she goes through. I'm like, what the hell? I thought we were much more advanced than that. But the point there being is, one, you have to have an advocate for you. But two, do you think that navigator is better positioned to be provided by the payer or health system?
That's actually a great question. The health system, it's in their interest to make things work efficiently. It's in their financial interest to do so. Also, they know you because they know what all your claims are. You know, they also know what's in network, so they can make referrals easy for you. They even know the ratings of their doctors in the network. So I think they are the most capable of doing that sort of navigation. The health system depends on how the health system, not just how they're reimbursed. The successful health systems, Tom, have plenty of patients, and they're looking for efficiency, you know. Yeah. The health system that's struggling is looking at visits, basically. So I think the successful health systems will do a fine job with navigation, and they have the ability to do things like, say, you had a virtual visit today, you really need a follow-up visit. Look, I have our appointment system available. Can you come in Tuesday at 9:30 a.m.? Patients would love that, you know, as compared to, you really should see a doctor. Here's the general phone number for our system. So health systems have the ability to do it better. You just have to make sure the incentives are aligned.
That's the key point, in making sure that the incentives are aligned, for sure. It just seems like I would agree. You know, the other stat that I rattle off is that, you know, to me, this transformation of care, while we all want to get to a quote unquote value based care model, right? At least achieve the tenets of a value based care model. But, you know, and when you say a hospital, you know, there's plenty of patients to go around. I can remember being on stage speaking a couple years ago, and I said exactly that. You know, we're all competing for the same patients. Mm-hmm. However, you know, you have a growing population, an aging mm-hmm. population, a sicker population, contracting more and more chronic conditions, and you have mm-hmm. less doctors and nurses to go around. The mm-hmm. point is that there's plenty of patients to go around. Stop competing with other hospitals. compete with, just focus on your patients as opposed to competing against your fellow healthcare providers, right? And because to me, it's wasted money in the context of, again, if you can promote your value, people will come and engage in that value. Your final thoughts? We have about 45 seconds left.
I'm very optimistic about the future. I see us as sort of reaching the next stage of medicine, you know, and I see a world in which we can tie together all sorts of data. Everything, as I said before, from genetic data, claims data, lab data, radiology results, and all that sort of stuff, and bring it to bear on the patient's care and give them the best care. You know, I fine tune for their genetics and their particular condition. So we've never been able to do those sorts of things. I mean, it's always been almost been science fiction in the past, but I see it happening now. So I'm optimistic, as I say.
Awesome. Alan Corey, MD, I appreciate you joining the program. Where can folks find more information out about you?
They can find me on LinkedIn, you know, Alan Corey, K-H-O-U-R-Y. And my email address is acorey100@gmail.com.
Awesome. Alan, I appreciate your time. Great conversation. All the best.
Okay. Thank you, Tom.
I want to thank the show sponsors, HP. HP Engage Long Lifecycle Products provides the stability, safety, and security you need, plus flexibility and performance designed for today and tomorrow. As well, GenieMD, providing a modular, scalable, and customizable virtual care platform and clinical services to help providers extend care into the home, increasing access and quality while driving new revenue opportunities. If you missed part of today's episode, you can tune in at the same time, 11 a.m. or 7 p.m. Eastern, throughout the week, and be sure to check out the program page on healthcarenowradio.com. And remember, connect or follow me on LinkedIn, Twitter at Foley Tom, and follow the show's hashtag, The Virtual Shift. I'm Tom Foley. Until the next shift.